Welcome back to the Hawk Zone Podcast. This is Jesse Newell, beat writer for the Capital Journal. I'm joined by Ben Ward, who helps out on the KU beat. Ben, how you doing?
Great.
It's crazy. Span of a couple weeks, I feel like we talked a couple weeks ago, there's so many questions with KU basketball, but how things change in the course of a week or two. We're going to talk a little bit about the last game against Iowa State, looking forward on the schedule, and how things change with Andrew Wiggins
playing
the way that he does.
Yeah.
But a quick look back at Iowa State, the game 92-81, KU beats Iowa State at home in a game, kind of looked like an NBA game, where both offenses were really rolling. And you wrote about this, Ben. Andrew Wiggins, again, an amazing performance for him, 29 points, and showing really what we expected from him all along.
Yeah, and, you know, it's all along, it's kind of been, you talk to him and he's getting comfortable, you know, starting to be more myself, this, that, and the other, and it's, you know, okay, but when we see the progress and he's, you know, it's the quiet, I called it quiet, you know, 17 and 19 against Iowa State the first time, but then, you know, he's really finding, I guess, his rhythm on offense, and you pointed it out too, like he's really integrated more. You can see him kind of working off the ball when he doesn't have it in his hands. You see him kind of doing these little things, running around. You mentioned the one play in particular that was supposed to be a lob that ended up him popping out, hitting a three. Just the little things like that, too, I feel like he is more comfortable in the offense. And obviously, when he's scoring like that, and when the team is scoring like that, I mean, NBA game, defense, whatever you want to call it, when they have five guys going off like that, and, you know, Nadir Tharp, 12 assists, 12 points, Perry Ellis, quiet, 20 points, I mean, how do you guard that team? How do you beat that team?
It's really tough for a team like Iowa State that doesn't have much size. But, you know, they've been a good defensive team.
Yeah.
Let's not overlook that. I was looking back, you know, the KenPom rankings had them as a top 25 defensive team coming in, and they're really good at avoiding fouls, you know, really good at defensive rebounding. They have some good skills there. But KU, man, last night in particular against Iowa State, like you said, from all five positions is what Bill Self talked about, how every player on the floor could score. Every player is a danger to score, and that's what's making them so tough to guard right now. And when you see a guy, you mentioned Tharp, when you see a guy with 12 assists and can also hit the three-point shot,
yeah,
it just adds like another weapon for KU and adds another dimension to that.
Well, exactly. And, you know, I tweeted the link out, and I saw you looked at it as well. Jeff Borzello did a piece where he's kind of breaking down teams that he thinks can win the national title, and he got opinions from various coaches around the league, and they're kind of anonymous or whatever, but essentially that's kind of one of the things that all these coaches are looking at and talking about is, you know, if you're trying to – they're playing inside out. So do you try to take away Ellis? Do you try to take away Embiid? Or, you know, are you face guarding and playing against Wiggins? Who are you gonna make beat you? And when all these guys are beating you, I mean, it's kind of like you're picking poison and you're eating it and dying.
Yeah, Bruce Weber brought up the same thing in his post-game press conference. He said –
yep.
You have to pick one. You can't decide that you're going to stop everything because you can't. And so that's really tough for certain teams, I think. And
mm-hmm.
I think we have seen also for KU, it hasn't happened often, we've seen a pattern to stop them offensively.
Sure.
Because I think the blueprint you want to have is kind of what Villanova and San Diego State both did. And, of course, they have a certain type of team
yeah.
that really caters itself well, which is they have amazing rim protection, they have a bunch of freakish athletes inside, and they also have guys that can kind of pressure on the outside. And we saw KU get taken out of its offense in those two games, but, man, no signs of that since. I kind of mentioned this in the recap blog. KU, I believe it's 1.22 points per possession for three straight Big 12 games. It's only happened once in Bill Self's tenure before this, so that's how you know when offense is rolling.
Yeah, I mean, they're clicking. And one thing I kind of wanted to ask you about as well is, you know, the points per possession thing, and you did mention the defense and how they've kind of fallen out and they're mm-hmm. one of Bill Self's worst teams. I wonder, I mean, part of it is obviously they haven't played exceptional defense for the majority of the year. They haven't gotten a ton of steals, that kind of thing. I wonder, too, how much of it is it just the rule changes? Is it just the fouls? Is it just the contact? I mean, because when you're used to having guys on the perimeter, and not to say that this team necessarily has one, but guys like Relaford,
mm-hmm.
guys like Russell Robinson, for example, who really got up in people's space, really hounded him, guarded him, you know, right on someone's shorts. How much does that take away from what Self likes to do and likes to coach? And I'm sure that plays a little bit of it, but you're right. And if, say, this team figures it out and can crack that top 30, that top 25 in total defense, I mean, What are we looking at here?
Yeah, it's interesting. There was also another blog online that talked about the coaches that were most affected by the new foul rules. And as you expect, I believe Bill Self was third or second on the list
yeah.
of all Division
I yeah.
coaches. Because, yeah, KU has a problem with fouling, and that's been a big issue for them this year. And when I'm looking at those numbers, when I'm looking at, hey, this might be the worst defense that Self has had in his 11 years at KU, what I'm comparing it to is their 30th in mm-hmm. that defensive ranking. And KU's only been 25th once, and I think they've been below 11th twice. So I'm kind of comparing it to the rest of the league, yeah, and the rest of the NCAA, if you will. So that's kind of what I'm looking at. So comparatively, really where this team has struggled, it's been two main areas. It's been the fouling, mm-hmm, and they've allowed a lot of free throws. And then also, you mentioned, this is – Bill Self's not really a guy that gets a ton of steals usually, not a guy that really preaches, okay, go over and overplay passing lanes. Yeah. But they usually get some. They, yeah, force some turnovers. This team has forced almost none. I mean, it's almost amazing how few turnovers this team forces. And you can kind of see it if you piece together what you're talking about with the defensive weapons they, yeah, have. You know, Nadir Tharp, not a guy that's getting a lot of steals. You know, Wayne Selden's a big body, but he doesn't get really close to guys. His steal numbers are way down. Andrew Wiggins, great on-the-ball defender. Not a guy that's really going to, yeah, again, get in a passing lane and take steals. If you look at their numbers, I'll look at this in a second here, but Perry Ellis and Joel Embiid are probably leading them in steals right now, I would think, yeah, or at least are in the top three, you know, if you look at the numbers. And if you want to look up real quick, you can. But it's amazing for a team like this with so much athleticism, like a Wayne Selden, like an Andrew Wiggins. You know, even Nadir Tharp, you would think, could get in people's shorts if he wanted to. It's amazing that a guy like Joel Embiid would be leading the team in steals. Yeah, I know he's athletic and a great big man, but that really shouldn't be happening.
Yeah, he's got 18, and Wiggins has got 18, and Perry's right there with 17. So, yeah, I mean.
Again, so where are Tharp and, yeah, where are Tharp and Selden
and they're
on
that down list? Those are both 14, and you got Mason with 12.
I mean, isn't that amazing? Yeah, at this point in the year, that those guys, again, Mason, 12 compared to his minutes is better than 14 for Tharp
or Selden. Yeah.
So it's kind of amazing. It's something that's overlooked, but the steal numbers and overall turnover numbers on defense, it just forces you to play perfect defensively. If you're fouling a lot and you're not getting any turnovers, you really have to play perfect first shot defense, and for the most part, KU's done pretty well in that and done a great job defensive rebounding.
Yeah.
And part of that is just the teams are so, as you read in the blog, yeah, from Borzello, so fearful of KU in transition.
Yeah.
And they should be.
And you might as well relent the boards to that end. And yeah, and one thing, though, that I wanted to point out there, if we're talking about steals, is like, think about some of the most pivotal plays down the stretch last night, right?
Yeah.
The couple steals in a row lead to a couple run-out buckets, the intentional foul, and it's like, kind of like I hinted at earlier, I mean, if this team puts it together there, too, if this team can start coming around on that end, and it's, you know, itself, so he's always going to say, well, we didn't guard anybody, or, you know, his usual things. But, I mean, imagine if this team gets better in that area. That's what I mean. Like, what are we looking at then?
It's something to think about, but I guess the issue I would have with that is time's running out here.
Yeah.
You know, it's late January, and the time to really make the leap in improvement is probably, you know, either before the season or during that winter break when you have the extra practice time.
Yeah.
And again, Iowa State and Oklahoma are always going to be a tough matchup for KU. It's,
yep,
going to pull Joel Embiid away from the basket. He's going to have to guard some guys in space, and a guy like George Niang can take advantage of that, take him off the drive, and make some three. So that's always going to be a tough matchup for them, but still, Iowa State was scoring basically at will times last night. There was one play I even put in my story. DeAndre Kane went coast to coast, like got the ball after KU scored.
After a make, yeah,
he took the ball coast to coast, made a layup, and it's just not something you see with the self defense. So
yeah,
some of those things, just not used to seeing.
Yeah, and it is, and a lot of it is, and Self pointed it out, and he wasn't as down about the defense yesterday as maybe you might have expected him to be. I mean, but they did, you know, Iowa State, I think, had 38 points in the paint. And yep, I want to say most of those, it just coming off recollection, were layups by Kane and Edgem. I mean, just right at the hole. Niang had quite a few. And again, that is kind of just a product of them being really good offensive players, but you probably would like to see some improvement there.
Yeah, and here's the scary part for KU, is they really, some coaches like a Bo Ryan, they really have the defensive philosophy to limit threes, because that's a great way to score against teams if you're an underdog.
Yep.
Self really is a fan of closeouts, like closeout, but he's always going to help the helper and help the,
yep,
helper's helper. And you saw that last night. A lot of times, a guy who's driving to the lane who isn't much of a threat drew some help, and then there was a kick out for an open three.
Yeah.
And so if you look at Iowa State, and I mean, this is Fred Hoiberg just being really smart with the analytics, being really smart with his team, almost all their shots were layups or threes. And that's perfect.
Yeah.
That's exactly what you want if you're any basketball team, because the worst shot you can take is a two-point jump shot. So,
yeah,
if you look at the numbers, Iowa State's effective field goal percentage, you know, they give some extra credit for three-pointers because they're, you know, worth more,
yeah,
than twos. That's the best shooting that any team's had against KU this year, was last night against Iowa State against KU. So they had a smart game plan. They came in with it. They executed it. They just couldn't stop KU. So,
yeah,
I think that's the danger of KU defensively, is that they don't really force teams off of the three-point line. They're,
yeah,
always kind of in help. And, you know, Iowa State, to their credit, for Fred Hoiberg, he's come up with some great offensive game plans. It's just they haven't always meshed with a great defensive game plan against KU, or like KU last night made a lot of
shots. Yeah, absolutely.
And
while that is kind of, you know, obviously it should be a concern, I absolutely think for Self and for KU. And the crazy thing is there is, like, for as talented as they are, as good as they are, and as well as they played last night, they lose by 11. I mean, it's
– Yeah, you know, yeah.
And that's – when you don't play defense, or when you have a team like KU where it's like, where are you going to stop them? What are you going to eliminate KU from getting? Or what? I mean, there were the spurts where KU would either, you know, Self always complains about throwing it away, and they turn it over still at a crazy rate. But, you know, then they when they would go on those little four-minute tears after the two-minute struggle, it's like the team was unstoppable.
And again, a lot of that's Allen Fieldhouse too, but it is amazing. And I called it in the blog a team of extremes. And that's really it, because right now that's what is trending. This looks like a defense that we're not used to seeing KU have because it's not as good. And this looks like an offense we're not used to seeing KU have because it's probably as good as any offense. You know, 07-08, I mean, honestly, obviously a great offense.
Yep.
And then you look back to the Morris Twins team, the junior year that lost to VCU. That was another great, great offensive team. So to get to that level, obviously, it takes a lot of steps and you have to be a great offense. But right now, this team is trending that way for sure.
Yeah, clicking. If that team, the first, whatever, say 10 minutes of that game last night, that team showing up.
Well, and I think a big part of it is, and we kind of talked about this a little bit, you look at all their pieces last night. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's go through the starting lineup here. You know, we talked about Wiggins.
Okay.
Obviously, he's on a roll.
Yep.
He scored 27 against TCU, 29 against Iowa State. Big thing for him is he's hitting jump shots. I looked up 4-for-8 on two-point jump shots last night, 4-for-6 on three-point jump shots. And he doesn't shoot four-footers. He shoots 18-footers off the dribble.
Footers,
So he's making legitimate jump shots. It's helped improve his game. But, you know, let's just go down the line here. Joel Embiid limits his turnovers last night, efficient enough offensively, playing pretty well.
Yeah.
I mean, had a knee injury, maybe a little bit dinged up, but...
But other than that...
Playing pretty decent.
Force inside.
Perry Ellis.
Missed maybe two shots.
Yeah, exactly. Like every single game, it seems like.
Yeah.
Makes all four of his shots at the rim.
Yeah.
Very efficient. He's going off on, you know, defensive boards a lot better than he has been. Nadir Tharp, we mentioned him, 12 assists, you know, a guy
that's... And then 12 points, oh, look what I found,
One, he's hitting the jump shots when he has to,
mm-hmm.
you know, when guys are... For a while, Iowa State was bringing the double team from Tharp's man. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah.
They were bringing the double team from the guard.
Yeah.
And basically, again, you're picking your poison. Are you going to let a 44% three-point shooter shoot open threes? And that's basically what Fred Hoiberg was deciding last night at the beginning of the game.
He missed the first couple, but...
After that. And even Wayne Selden, you know, I've been plenty critical of Wayne Selden on the blog, but last night he has three turnovers, but shoots it well. Great shot selection, only took threes and layups, kind of like I talk about that, the shot selection.
And had, I think, five assists, if I'm not mistaken.
He hasn't been the best of passers, and he had five assists last night.
And he made that one of those ridiculous hustle plays where he swooped in and broke up an alley-oop. I mean, you know, Selden, he's at least putting forth the effort, you know.
And that's kind of what we talk about, the complete effort. You know, if you get all five of those guys playing that well, KU's bench didn't play great last night. Doesn't really matter. And the bench has been up and down, but there's still so much front court depth that you think, man, and two guys were missing. Tarik Black, Connor Frankamp, two guys they relied upon, missing last night because of injuries. So it is kind of interesting to just look at this big picture thinking, man, this offense, as good as it is.
Yeah, what can they do? Yeah, what more can they do?
Yeah, and if you look at the Big 12 stats, you know, first in two-point percentage, first in three-point percentage, first in this, first in efficiency, 10th in turnovers.
Yeah.
So, again, maybe a little bit of growth still left there. I wanted to talk a little bit about the upcoming schedule and the Big 12 race going forward. Bill Self mentioned that this could be the toughest three-game stretch. Obviously, once you get by tough three-game stretches, you mentioned the next tough three-game stretch is tough. But at Texas and at Baylor, kind of an interesting road trip for KU, playing both those teams within 3 days. And Texas could be kind of an interesting matchup because they do have true bigs. That's something that not many Big 12 teams can throw at Kansas.
Yeah, they are big, and, you know, Ridley's a hoss. I mean, they list him at 285, and I'd be surprised if he's under three bills.
He's short a few cheeseburgers on that one. I think a few Whataburgers maybe down in Austin.
Yeah, he's a big guy. But and I'm wondering again. I mean, it's a problem with a lot of people guarding Embiid. But does he have the lateral quickness to move with a guy like Embiid? Can you get him in foul trouble just because he's just such an immovable object? Is it going to be a game like? And I know this is a different player, but similar to size and quickness is like a Georgetown's Josh Smith, and how much trouble KU gave him. Holmes, though, is a guy that, I mean, his length bothers people. He blocks a lot of shots. But then again, I mean, KU's front court, I mean, Perry Ellis has been bothered by length, but does he guard Ellis, or do you try to have him face guard Wiggins? And it's just one of those things. What is Texas going to kind of try to do? It'll be interesting. I mean, Austin's not known as, like, necessarily a tough place to play. Will KU get up for it? At this point, I'm not inclined to really doubt these guys getting up for it. It seems like they've been up for every game. It seems like every run that a team makes at them, Iowa State made several runs, you know, the other day, and KU just keeps answering. I mean, maybe they'll slip and fall one of these days, but who knows? I'm not necessarily going to pick against them.
Yeah, this is an interesting matchup, just because, like you said, in Austin there's going to be a lot of KU fans, but it is a road game still, and if they could get excited for any game, this should be it for a long time, because Texas has been down, you know, quite a while, and this is a legitimate game for them. You know, like this in the Big 12 race, if Texas wins this one, they could legitimately look at the standings and say,
we got a shot.
Hey, you know, a game back and still got to play KU again. They could dream a little bit, I guess, is maybe the way you'd want to put it.
And this is their opportunity to tie KU's little achievement that they said earlier when they beat four ranked teams in a row. This could be Texas'
That's right.
win over a ranked team in a row.
So, That's I mean, right.
This team is clicking. Barnes deserves a lot of credit for what he's done.
I think what will be interesting about this matchup is kind of like you talked about in the front court, how that all works out. Texas, sixth in the nation in block percentage defensively. And again, we talked about some of the teams that give KU trouble. KU's so good at getting the ball so close to the basket.
Yeah.
You know, they feast on easy shots. That's what Bill Self is. And even though they turn it over some to get those easy shots, if you win the battle of easy shots, you're probably going to win.
Yeah.
But it's going to be tougher to get those easy shots. You're going to have to go over some length against Texas. So can Texas take KU out of its offense in a game that is a somewhat road environment? And remember, a year ago, KU struggled at Texas, so this is not a gimme game no matter what you're looking at it from. It's tough because if you look at the schedule for KU, you know, I predicted they'd probably lose 4 or 5 games in conference.
Yeah.
Well, now they're 7-0. They're probably not going to lose 4 or 5 games in conference. But you still think, okay, they're probably going to drop 2 or 3.
Two or three.
Okay, so you got at Oklahoma State left for KU, and you got at K-State left, and you got at Texas. And outside of that,
you got at Baylor. I mean,
Baylor rolled them last year. So you got those four games, but it's almost like you're getting to the point like, man, if Texas doesn't beat them, who's going to knock them off?
Yeah. And I think that, like I said, I mean, you have to assume law of averages and whatever, and whatever kind of mythical juju you believe in when it comes to that. You know, you can't necessarily look at the schedule right now and say, this is a loss, this is a loss,
yeah,
this is
exactly.
a loss. And it's like we talked about it a little bit earlier. Once they got kind of through that murderer's row of their first 5 conference games and they're looking at it and they're 5-0, I mean, you're already kind of seeing people around the conference and around the country kind of just chalk up number 10 already. And, I mean, in a lot of ways, it's kind of tough to blame them, just how the math and how the schedule shakes out.
Yeah, again, a lot of it's just probabilities.
Man.
And if you're looking at KenPom's projections, again, not the end-all be-all, but Kansas at 15-3, and then Oklahoma and Oklahoma State at 12-6 projected. So if you're even counting, you know, a tie as a win for KU to get the 10th Big 12 title, I mean, you're talking KU's going to have to drop probably 4, if not 5 games, and they've started 7-0. So they've got 11 games left. They're going to have to drop basically 2 or 3 that you don't think are going to happen. So, again, race is not over, and this Texas game obviously is huge in that regard because
Absolutely.
Texas is one of the closest competitors to them. But, man, if you win this game, it would take the opposite of a miracle. It would take a total debacle for KU to get in any sort of position where they would be even threatened for the Big 12 title or to not share it at the very end of the season.
Well, because, you got this trip in Texas, you know, so it's the trip to Austin and they go down to Waco. You come home for West Virginia. I mean, you know, it's not necessarily, you wouldn't call it a gimme, but that's one of the easier home wins they're going to have. You go to Bramlage where, I mean, you know, Bramlage can be a tough place to play, especially when KU comes to town. It's always a big game for them, but, you know, I mean, they've had K-State's number, and they match up so favorably with K-State. K-State is going to really struggle to guard them again, similarly. You know, it's where the loss is coming.
It's probably more of kind of a combination of that. You probably, if you throw Texas, at Baylor, at K-State, and at Oklahoma State into a hat, you probably say, okay, there's 2 losses in there. but you probably can't pick out which ones they are.
Yeah.
You know, probably at Oklahoma State if you had to guess, and one of the other three you pull out of a hat. But again, if KU makes it through that four-game stretch with two losses,
yeah,
get the trophy case ready.
Yeah, it doesn't even seem to matter. And I think, you know, maybe even Bill would appreciate it just so he could chew them out a couple more times before the tournament. But you know, I mean, we've talked about it all pod long now, and this team is just clicking, rolling. And it's fun to watch, really, just because incrementally how much better they've gotten. I mean, you think back, you know, when they lost their, you know, they lose in Florida, they lost to Colorado, they lost at Florida, and it was like the end. It was like end times for a lot of fans around Lawrence. And now the confidence is back, and the trophy case is being readied, as you said.
Yeah, it's so interesting to me. I think Bill Self has talked about how he wants to improve on turnovers. Absolutely, that's a way for them to get better offensively. But it feels like they're getting closer to the ceiling there. It feels like they're getting closer. So defensively is, I think, the real big thing to watch. And the other thing is, if KU does start to run away with this league, kind of playing for seeding now, too. Like, how high can they move up in the seeding? Can they get a one seed? And I've got to mention this since we're on a podcast. And we, you know, you listen to us for opinions, right? Man, I've just been dreaming the last week how awesome a 1-2 matchup of KU, Wichita State, and Memphis would be in the NCAA tournament.
And who gets the one?
It doesn't matter. I don't care. Do whatever. If Wichita State needs to lose to get that 2 seed, whatever. But would that not be just – it would be awesome in two respects. For one, it would be, okay, KU, you wouldn't schedule them. You've always said you won't. And now you have to play him. And for two, it would be, okay, Greg Marshall, you've been yapping this whole time. You've been whining and just, you won't drop it.
Yeah.
Now it's put up or shut up, man. I mean, I was just thinking, like, all the storylines and the Wiggins versus Wiggins. I'm like, come on, Lunardi, just keep putting that game down so the committee knows to put 1-2, KU, Wichita State, and Memphis.
Oh, man. And, I mean, in all honesty, like, and I think, yeah.
It would be epic.
Just pure guessing, I think, you know, and just based on lineups and how they're playing, whatever, I think KU would win that game. But, oh, man, I don't think people in Lawrence want it. I don't. I think people in Lawrence are nervous about it. It's just one of those things. Because, once again, it's like you lose that. If you're playing, say you schedule that non-con game, whatever. If you're playing that game, Wichita State's in that situation still. They're the Shockers. They're great, whatever. They have still everything to gain from that. And KU and their fans, with the way they are, they have a lot to lose. And
I'm also picturing, because there's more media access in the NCAA tournament, the day before presser for Greg Marshall having to face 25 minutes of media and just talk about KU the whole time. I mean, how entertaining would that be? I mean, that'd be like a Richard Sherman show, you know what I mean? Like the whole thing, it would be awesome. I would just be in Nirvana, just, there would be quote after quote from that, and he would probably just not stop talking.
We would be fairly busy, and at least it would be early enough that the deadline wouldn't get to us, because we got too many stories to write from something like that. But
I'm dreaming of that. That would be, again, I know some KU fans wouldn't like it. Heck, some Wichita State fans probably wouldn't like it because they probably watched KU recently and thought, this team looks like it's pretty good, but come on, committee, make it happen. Come on. Right?
Well, I mean, if it's Memphis, at least we get some of that tasty Memphis barbecue. Maybe that's what I'll look forward to.
Tarek Black's going to show us around. He can take us around the city and show us to all the good places.
I bet Tarek knows some spots.
I bet he does. There's some places that serve the good stuff. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Yeah, back in Emporia, we always, you know, we can take you out to the good, the authentic Mexican places. You know, we know our way around.
You got to find the locals.
Exactly. Exactly. Locals. Well, I guess I'll just keep dreaming about that. Maybe Wichita State needs to lose, or KU needs to lose a couple more. And again, very interesting that we don't even talk very much about the injured guys for KU, because Tarek Black, Connor Frankamp, part of the rotation, don't play in that Iowa State game, and KU doesn't miss a beat, so that kind of makes them scary as well, that even if there's an off night for one of these guys, somebody doesn't perform, man, there's guys to go to.
Yeah.
Even Landon Lucas, who's 11th on the list,
yeah.
I guess.
And that's just one of the luxuries of just KU right now, and you look at a guy like Lucas. I mean, just look around. How many teams would he start for?
We've mentioned this.
Would he be this? I mean, if he's not starting, then he's the, you know, he probably doesn't start at Iowa State, fine, but he's their sixth man, seventh man, you know?
And, yeah.
And K-State, on KU, there's not, yeah. And
K-State, I mean, Gibson's a great player, but they probably kind of have a similar skill set, but wouldn't K-State sell out to have a guy like Landon Lucas
sure,
on their team?
The skilled big with the, you know, with the hands and the athleticism of Lucas.
Rebounding?
Sure, yeah.
A
guy like Landon, yeah, I mean, it's impressive. And while you mentioned the injured guys, why not throw a little quick news update in there? I mean, Frankamp's x-rays on his knee were negative, Self said, but sounded like he might miss some time. Black's probably close, but again, he didn't want him to chase around Yang, so they didn't play, and like you said, didn't miss a beat.
Yeah, well, and Brandon Green's kind of emerged as the number one option probably in that mix of the next guard off the bench, if you will.
Yeah.
Frank Camp's kind of been sprinkled in on certain matchups, and then Tarik, you know, I think Bill Self's really still high on Tarik for what he can provide on the boards and leadership and kind of just steady play other than the fouls. So I think he'll get back in there once he's healthy, but
I think so,
it's still going to need a little bit of time to heal up that injured ankle that kind of looked nasty against Baylor from a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Any last thoughts moving forward, Ben? I know that KU, obviously, like I said, in the span of a month has kind of changed the whole storyline on us, but anything going forward that you think is going to be a big key for KU, especially in these next few games coming up on the road, a swing through Texas, I guess.
Well, I mean, you get through this little stretch, this little Texas stretch with two wins. I mean, you're looking at 9-0. That's looking pretty impressive. You kind of touched on it today in your recap with the most outstanding Jayhawk. You might as well name that the Wiggins section now. But it's not. I mean, you know, it's funny and all, and it's crazy. Like, what if this is the new norm for him? And you can't expect him to score 27-29. I'm not necessarily saying that, but you know, what if this kid's now going to start averaging around, you know, 20-22 as opposed to 16, which is, as you know, Self has said all year. I mean, that's a great total when you have five guys in Big 12 play averaging double figures as KU does. Is he going to score 20 some odd points a game? Who knows?
Again, you mentioned the comfortability in the offense and how he seems to be figuring out when to pick his spots and not force the spots. And we mentioned this too, something maybe fans won't fully appreciate about Andrew Wiggins is how often he gets to the free throw line.
Yeah.
And again, making free throws is one thing, but getting to the free throw line is a skill. We saw last year with a guy like Elijah Johnson where Bill Self said in the preseason, oh yeah, he's going to drive more, he's going to get to the free throw line. It never happened. Some guys just have that in them, and Andrew Wiggins has that in him. So even on a rough night, maybe he goes 3-for-9, he can still get to 14, 16 points because he can get to the free throw line, you know, 8 to 10 times. So that's such an advantage. And while KU has been hurt by the foul rule in that they foul a lot more, they've been helped by the foul rule because their guys, Embiid, Ellis, and especially Wiggins, even Black to an extent, all get to the free throw line really often. Yep. So that's something to kind of look for. If you see an 8 or a 10 in the free throws attempted next to Andrew Wiggins, that's a huge lift for KU because those are free points that KU can get that maybe other teams can't because they have such a talented player in the
middle. Well, and so there are guys, too, that are sitting down for the other team. I mean,
yeah.
If you look at the Iowa State game, I mean, Edgem had two quick ones, and I think Kane did as well. And those are, you know, when those guys aren't on the floor, if KU's getting points out of that situation, that's just a bonus because you're getting the other team's top dogs off the floor.
Absolutely. It's kind of a double win for KU if you get that. And, again, one of the big strengths of them offensively. Just another, you know, another tool in the toolbox.
Ho-hum, right?
Is that they shoot the twos best, shoot the threes best, and get to the free throw line the best. So it'll be exciting to watch them going forward, see if they can even reach higher on that ceiling offensively while, again, trying to get to at least be not the worst defensive team that Self has seen in 11 years.
And who knows, maybe we'll end up in Memphis eating barbecue, watching the Jayhawks and Shockers.
Oh, gosh.
I know Earl's at least dreaming about
it. Oh, man, yeah, Earl loves to write about the Shockers. And Kevin Haskin, our columnist, he would be delighted to have all of those in there. I saw another bracketology, too, that had KU, K-State, and Wichita State all at the same first-round site. So how would that be, too? Hey, talk about fun. That would
Kansapalooza.
Be, oh, man, and again, just Marshall being in the same place as Self. Oh, fireworks. I would love it. You know, for everything that he gets crap for and for all these, you know, oh, he shouldn't be saying this or that, isn't it fun?
I mean, it is fun.
It's fun when that sort of stuff happens. It's fun when there's some talk. We saw the Oklahoma State game earlier, KU-Oklahoma State, with Marcus Smart and those guys going at it. That kind of stuff's fun. And let's bring it on. Bring it on, Memphis. I'm ready for you.
I appreciate it. Bring on the ribs, please.
All right. For Ben Ward, this is Jesse Newell. Thanks, everyone out there, for checking out the HawkZone.com podcast.
Boom.